So before starting actually the panel discussion, I just wanted to show you a little interview that we have recorded with Robin Ling, who is the chief of Ringier Africa and Asia. Ringier is a Swiss media company, one of the three big Swiss media companies, and it's very active in Africa. He couldn't be here because he's in Africa at the moment, but he agreed to give us an interview. So I'll just show you the recording. Okay. So what, actually, just to introduce the interview, what we have been asking to Robin Ling is, why did they go to Africa? And why did they go in certain specific countries, and with what kind of activities? We were interested to see if they really were doing, activities in the news business, or if it was more e-commerce business. What kind of revenues from which activities they were getting, and also what were the main problems that they encountered, and what is it? His vision of the future for media firms. So, okay.
Yeah, I think doing business in emerging countries, in early stage markets, is somehow part of the DNA of Ringier. We are doing this for more than two decades already in a very successful way. We started more than 20 years ago as kind of first movers in Central Eastern Europe. At the same time, more than 20 years ago in Asia, in Vietnam and China, developed over more than two decades fairly successful businesses there. And then, of course, thinking about the next big thing, immediately, 4 or 5 years ago, Africa came on our radar. Then also thinking about the digital know-how, the digital technology that we have built and acquired in our diversification and digital transformation process over the last 10 years, made clear that this know-how, this technology could be very beneficially deployed in African countries that are leapfrogging a lot of the digital developments that the Western world went through the last 25 years. So at the end of the day, this mix of seeing a huge opportunity for digital businesses in Africa in connection with the 25 years of experience, and with that feeling comfortable doing business in emerging markets, has led us to the decision to go to Africa. At the very beginning, of course, we did quite an in-depth research on the different markets. We then decided first to go to Nigeria, Ghana, and Kenya. Kenya mainly because of the talents you find there in the tech space. It is considered as a hub for technology in Africa. And then also because it has the best developed online payment system, which for our e-commerce businesses is essential. So to pilot e-commerce in Africa, Kenya was considered and is considered as a priority country, definitely. We went to Ghana because we see there a very stable country with quite a big number of people you can count to the middle class. And then Nigeria, at the end of the day, because of the sheer size of the country, and we said, if you are bold to do business in sub-Saharan Africa, you have to be bold enough to also try it in Nigeria. And then later we expanded. Nowadays we're in Tanzania, we're in Senegal, we have projects in Ethiopia. This continues. At the very beginning, 4 years ago, we tried a couple of business models we know from our other countries, but also completely new things to us. Then after 2 years, we decided really to focus on what we can best, on what we have successfully developed in our Swiss businesses and our Central Eastern European businesses. So it's a full concentration on digital publishing, on content, then e-commerce and classified. Yeah, when it comes to content, to digital publishing, we have started all our activities really from scratch. So building our technology, bringing our know-how, then building around that highly talented local teams, building local editorials. Do we then collaborate with other content producers and providers in the country? Yes, definitely. We produce in the meanwhile also some video content for TV stations, for example, in Ghana. And of course, we closely collaborate. But at the end of the day, we start and build companies from the scratch. So at the moment, most of our revenue definitely comes from our digital publishing activities and also from the digital marketing agencies that we build in some countries that are business models where we know quite well how to build in very little time a huge audience and reach that then immediately can be monetized. And then, of course, we also have revenues from e-commerce and from classifieds, but that are business models that need a little bit more time to be monetized in a meaningful way. They need more market education. So when it comes to short-time revenues, then it's definitely publishing that at the moment delivers most of it. Wherever you do business, you encounter problems. I think we did very well at the beginning in taking 2 years as kind of pilot phase in learning about how business works in Africa, learning how we maybe must adapt our business models, but also our technology to the local needs and the local reality. So I think this helped us to face less problems in developing our business models. But definitely, I think at the end of the day, the most important thing is that you have your network. Finding the right talents, finding talents is sometimes challenging, and then retaining talents can be even more challenging. And there, finding the right approach, the right way around, definitely is maybe the single most important and the single most challenging thing you face in Africa. When we're talking about classified and e-commerce businesses, and we're talking about businesses that are still fairly unknown in those countries, so you just do not find people that have relevant experience working on that business models, and then it's all about coaching and training and educating local talents you find, at least if you want to do business as we want to do it, and that means local business with local people. So you need for those business models 1, 2, 3 expats that have done the same business elsewhere successfully and can bring the expertise, and then you have to train, coach and educate. When it comes to digital publishing and journalism, content production is something that you find locally. So there it's then about getting the right people that have the right digital mindset. And again, that you can train, and we invest a lot in sending trainers, sending coaches to those countries, but also bringing our local employees to our businesses here in Switzerland or even in Central Eastern Europe. We have exchange with our School of Journalism, we have exchange with our businesses in Asia, so we are trying there really to leverage on our global experience, and at the end of the day, this is also what makes us quite attractive as an employer in Africa. That people can tap into this waste experience we have around the globe. And at the very, very end, it's about network, building your network, knowing people, getting the right references, and this is how you can then build successful local teams. Well, generally, I think, what is a media firm nowadays? I mean, it has very little to do with the traditional printing and publishing. If the media firm is still doing the traditional printing and publishing, they have to change fast. I think we as publishers, we have to adapt We have to diversify. We have to digitize. At the end of the day, it's about producing great content that finds its relevant audience through whatever channel, building strong brands, and then be just fast. I think nowadays it's not anymore that the bigger eats the smaller, but the faster wins over the slower one. And yes, somehow established companies are there facing huge competition from all those startups, from all those very fast, very hungry people with great ideas, and we have to keep up with that, and we have to become as fast as all those new media publishers. I think it's not necessarily a must doing business in Africa now. I think if you have this understanding of yourself as a company that you want to do business in emerging markets, and if you are considering yourself being a digital company nowadays, then Africa offers a huge opportunity. And then somehow for us, yes, it became a must. But I think the space is very wide open. There are a lot of opportunities around the globe. You know, at the end of the day, every company has to decide where to focus on, where they can best deploy and develop their capabilities and expand. For us, Africa is interesting, is important, and I think maybe in 10 years it will be a must then for most of the publishers that want to be engaged internationally.
So that was it, and I think between these presentation and Sophie's, we can have content enough to start our panel. So I please ask Sophie to come forward, Stephen as well, and Emmanuel Binet, who we did hear already when he made his intervention. Emmanuel Binet is an infrastructure and diffusion network specialist working between Ghana and the UK. So thank you, Peter, for moderating also this last session.
Thank you. So I believe that Africa is the next big thing, but is it really the next big thing for European media companies? Do you think that it's you know, we see that he's experimenting. He earns not a lot of money. And do you think that Africa is really the next big thing for European media companies, suffering media companies? Oh, any company. Is there a, you know, they are all searching for new territories, opportunities, but is it why is Ringy alone to go there? So who wants to answer first? As we have a girl on the a lady the so panel for the first time, so you speak first.
Not too much.
Not too much. Yeah.
As a girl, speak I speak too much. A lot. No, it's a question that has been asked to Robin, and it's not a must. But for us, in the case of Le Monde, it made sense because we are a French-speaking media, and there is a very, very large French-speaking audience in Africa. And again, there is an existing audience, so it's not like totally new for us. It's just like the coverage that we want to do is different, and the vision we want to have is different. And what is different as well is that we want also to do business with this. Doing business is not really doing business because we don't expect a lot of money from this, but like we expect to spread like the audience and to be at least to cover the costs. So it's a way for Le Monde to expand its audience and influence without losing money, which is in the media industry today already like not too bad. Basically for us it's strategic because this is where the growth is. But it's also because it makes sense, and we had a debt regarding the coverage of Africa by the newspaper.
Tell us, do you think that these companies coming to Ghana or to Nigeria, they really can get a part of the market of these classifieds, for instance? I think every country has companies who want to have the, not the monopoly, but the whole market of these advertorials. They don't wait for a Swiss act to get it.
Well, there is a huge market in Africa for these companies. You know, Africa is the next step, either to make it and breakthrough, or is a step to crash you down. If you don't know the territory, then you cannot really excel in Africa. Africa development and Africa excellency is based on who you know and what you know. So if you come into the territory, if you ignore who you know and what we know, you might be the biggest muzzle person in Europe, but you'll be the smallest ant in Africa because of how we operate. You know, a lot of people, Richard Branson just hooped out of the plane business from Ghana because Virgin Ghana is no more. And it's because exactly what I said is who you know and how you know how we do things.
And so what advice do you give to an European media company?
Yes.
Wanting to come to your country. What is the best advice you can give them?
When you come into the country and you came in with an aim, you have to focus on that aim. What normally happens is they come in into the country and say they come in as a media company, and then you, the next time you see them digging mines, all right? And the next time you go to an oil meeting and they are sitting in there. You understand what
I
mean?
Yes,
and
yes.
So it doesn't work. So if you come into the country...
And you experienced this.
Of course. So my advice is if you come into the country to build a media mast, make sure that is done. Whilst you muffle up the businesses, then you are stepping on toes that you wouldn't know you are, you know, because it's politically seriously inclined, and there might be a huge power controlling oil and a huge power controlling this, and so you put yourself in a contention that you really will not be aware of unless it bites you. So when you come into the country, you focus on what you're doing and you do it and do it well. There'll be a lot of things that sounds good, a lot of things that will attract you as a business person, but it, you know, there's always undercurrent with everything that comes up.
Mr. Smith?
If I had any advice to give someone going into Africa, I think it would be the advice that old president, the Ivorian president, gave us journalists at the time. He said, never go to a village without someone who's already known by the village. So I think that is partly what he just said. If you move into Africa, the first condition is that it is whom you know. And you must be sure, some panelists stated that early on, you must be sure that you engage with the right people. That's absolutely, there's wealth in people. That's the most important thing, the first step. As a sort of illustration of that, I actually do work for people who want to go into Africa, so I'm a consultant with a Pan-African news station, Africa News, which will be the equivalent of Euronews. I work for a Swedish telephone company as a consultant, Tigo, they have their brand name from South America, and I do so because I think it's a challenge to how realistic my assumptions as an academic are when it comes to going into Africa. And now if I had broadly to address the question, when would you move into Africa? It depends very much. I can understand that a media moves into Africa. There is a national outreach for Le Monde to be in Francophone Africa. Obviously, sometimes things work a little bit at cross purposes. If I look at the figures in, I take again Abidjan, prior to 10 years ago, 3,000 copies a day were sold of Le Monde in Abidjan. Today, it's down to 30. So they do the right thing to move back into what is a natural extension of their realm. If I had to move into Africa, I would also look at how useful is what I'm doing. I explained or pointed out to you early on that Africa will, within the next 20 years, be the only part in the world where youth is predominant, whereas all other places in the world will be graying, like myself. And so even China, Latin America, everything will grow older. So if you're in a business of entertainment, if you're into a business of education, we had someone who spoke online classes. I mean, working with Tigo, I try to stress I'm not very good on entertainment, as you may have understood, but I try to think about 4G, telephone, and the immense desire in Africa to educate. Wherever you go, you find people who are learning English, French, or whatever they do, they are watchmen and they're working. I don't know where they take the courage from. I'm not going to romanticize about it, but I think many people, once you have 4G and telephone, you can offer them classes that they can take online, that there is a huge potential for that. So it depends on various things. I come back to my initial statement. The one difficulty about Africa is that you are being judged on how long you've been around. And many people who move in now, newcomers, will need some people, hopefully mostly African peoples, who actually show them the way into the continent. And that flies into the face of our idea that, you know, this is a global world, what works in New York will work in Lagos, etc. It just doesn't. It is a very specific place, and it's not making it exotic to say so, but how business is done, and I was impressed by the interview. I think having 2 years just to learn how to do business and then concentrate on what you do best is a very good strategy, and so you have to feel your way into Africa to do business there.
So Give us some examples. Who are the big players coming to Africa now, from the telephone operators, from others, from media companies? And who is the cleverest? Who does it the most clever?
Well, the big companies, Vodafone is there. Vodafone is huge, as you know.
And clever?
Vodafone, clever, but not smart. You see, in Africa, academic sense is different from streetwise sense. And so you could go to parliament and talk, but when you get on the street and the guys have gathered and you talk, it would not be relevant to them. Yeah. So in Africa, academic sense is different from street sense.
And it's same thing here.
Perfect. So to make it, you have to know both. In Ghana, for example, if you go to a place called Nima, they control things completely different. And what the government says does not work there at all. All right, so when there was a political dispute, they had to really come down and beg them so that the court will deal with the issue. You understand? So, but Vodafone is there. Vodafone, you know, deals with the elite, but really cannot reach the... when Glo came in, they make a good impact. Now Tigo is coming up. These are big players in the telecom industries. BBC has been there for a while. CNN has been there. But they play the game free to view. But they do pay view on the side based on contents. And they are smart, right? So it's how to play the game in Africa. But one thing I'll tell, corporations that wants to come into Africa, it's always wise to start from a communal impact. We believe in community, all right? So if you go and see a big man still have to subdue his powers to a chief, whether he likes it or not, because the chief really deals with the people on a day-to-day basis. So a minister will come to an area like Takwa, an area, and say, okay, we want to dig some gold here. He will go, and you can't dig the gold. You'll bring all your machines. You can't dig the gold. When the minister comes back, he wouldn't be able to talk. There are certain things you have to do for the community to even accept your business. So being responsible for the community is a key for those who want to do investments in. You really have to think of the community. If it's
and who is investing most in this TNT conversion?
The DTT2, is that the one you're talking about?
TNT, it is this new technology.
All right. The new technology, I don't know what you mean by TNT.
Who spoke about TNT? DTT, yes.
Of course, okay. Yes. It's the DTT2 technology, which is the new technology. Yeah. So we're actually moving from analog to DTT2.
Yes.
Now, there were a couple of bits there, and I will keep some information classified, if you don't mind. But star times were there.
These are the Chinese.
These are the Chinese. Yes. As he said, the right wing of the Chinese government. So,
Are they clever, smart? The Chinese in Africa. I read all these stories about Chinese in Africa. They are buying everything.
Do you want the Chinese to meet me out of the door and bury me? That's a serious question.
Answer the question.
Yes, if I'm being blunt, they were not smart. They were not smart.
What did they want?
They wanted to build the whole infrastructure of the DTT2. And then they also wanted the set-top boxes in every home to be controlled.
That's very smart.
That's not smart. You will never. It will happen.
It's intelligent, but not smart.
It will not happen because then they wanted to be a broadcaster sitting on the platform as well. That's not smart. Yes. I mean, you either keep yourself with a multiplex and you handle the infrastructure, and you know, and then let things go. But they want, because if they put their CA on the infrastructure, on the multiplex, it means you can only buy their set-top boxes or their decoders. Mm-hmm. All right, and that was the strategy they were trying to use. So when GABA rose up against them, they've lost the whole deal, and they have to kick you out. So there is a way to come into Ghana and do the business. And I don't know if it's quite different from other African countries, but I think they're pretty the same. You need to understand the communities. You need to understand the power the communities have. You need to understand that someone can sign a paper with you in parliament, but on the ground, the communities can break it there.
Can you cite, tell us other examples of companies who have been kicked out of Africa after trying to come in, like Virgin, in the media business? Do you know examples?
No, I wouldn't know. And very often, I think you have to apply this for people who actually try to interact with Africa. Many people just act in Africa. So, for example, if you open up a media and you have a window for Africa, you are fine in a sense because you don't directly engage with Africa. It's a very different thing to set up an African media. I'll let Sophie speak for herself, but I think she is a little bit of a hybrid because they work in Africa with Africans. But, you know, CNN opening up an African window in their general coverage, they can work with, you know, Black Americans, Africans, etc., and they just insert it into their... They don't have the same challenges that people mm-hmm. have. I think Emmanuel explained better than I possibly could how it is working in Africa is a very specific thing. Now, it is not, you know, outrageously outlandish by comparison to other places. Probably someone who's knowledgeable about China would tell us it's very difficult to work in China. Just let me add, I'm impressed by the fact when you work for yourself with Africans, if you look at 1 million Chinese over the last 10 years having moved into Africa, that's quite a success story. And people who very often didn't even know the language that was spoken in the countries they went to, they went right out of China because of the stiff competition, so many people, so many strivers, and they said, maybe there's a future for me in Africa, and maybe Africa will be the, you know, the stepping stone to go to Europe or to America afterwards. And they just did it and engaged with African realities, are far from being the racist as they are very often depicted. They have the same sort of proportion of racist than other people, but they also have people who, you know, marry in Africa, and it's really an important story if you're interested in that. It's an entrepreneurial story, and one of the things they are going after is, for example, land. So they're cultivating land in Africa. Not many moved into the media. That's why I'm going to cut it short there.
and in the Indians, they are very strong in IT business. Are they coming to your country also, or are they also so only in the Eastern Africa?
No, the Indians are there. they, like you said, rightly said, they are solid in IT. I believe that they, the gateway, they, you know, they trying to galvanize all the telecoms together, and the gateway for that, the Indians are in charge. But what the Indians do is they will do 20% of their workers and about 80% of local content, of local people. You see, so you're always covered because you kind of put in value on the local entrepreneurship and local manpower that is underground. The Chinese don't do that a lot. I think it's the other way around, you know. But in terms of, I want to go back and, you know, throw a bit of light on how you will succeed in Africa. Africa has three levels of powers. So we have our political power, and then we have our royal power is still strong, especially in Ghana. Then we have our community power. Right. Now, all these three must be kind of convinced in a way. If you don't know, like I rightly said, you a top guy will sign something with you, and a chief will just say, nobody can come into this area, and nobody can come into that area. Now, what the communities are looking for normally makes a company so successful. So I think companies need to start from, what are they really looking for, right? Than just coming in with your big idea. Let's say I have 4G or LTE or things like that. But what is this region really looking for? Whilst you get that on your table, then I think you are 40% on the skill to succeed, because you've touched their belief system and you've touched their inner core values. Whilst you do that, they are able to take it to any level. It is the same way a political power will win elections. He comes in and his constituency will have to say, what are you doing for us? So he has to go and amend his constitution to actually read what the people are looking for. I'm a media man. I took satellite and I did the first satellite transponder in Ghana. And it doesn't matter how the technology is good and nice and whatever, it comes down to what the people are looking for. They said, you know, our man here who just left, I think in the morning or in the afternoon, said there are a lot of Nigerians who are interested in Nigerian local content, right? I'll tell you something, if a Ghanaian sees himself on television, he'll pay you any money he wants to pay you. So now you can bring High School Musical on TV, but you can go, you can take a camera into a community and get people, just do a guerrilla shoot, get people just how they hustling and bustling, right? And he'll go and say, hey, I saw you on TV. Yeah. And that's it. And that will spread even more than a mass media. So you need to understand what the people are looking for and then tailor your business to that line. That is the only way they win power. That is the only way they come and sit on the throne for a while. Then the next thing I will say is this, so I won't talk too much, as you've warned
me. No, it's very interesting, very inspiring. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. The next thing I will say is this. Sometimes businesses do not think of the purchasing power that is in the environment, you see. And when you're going into Africa, you should really look into that, all right? How much they earn. When they earn, what is priority for them? I tell you, no one will buy a content if they have to buy kenke or fufu and fish. That will become the biggest thing. Or if they have to take their children to school before. So it doesn't matter how the media is so nicely presented, marketing and things like that. And I'll give you a good example with DSTV, multi-choice. I believe someone mentioned it here. So DSTV have their uplink in South Africa, but they have an outlet in Ghana. So what DSTV does in Ghana is they distribute their set-up boxes and dishes in Ghana. But the transmission actually is done via Intelsat from South Africa. And so people sign up with DSTV, but this month they will pay, next month they will not pay because their need for next month really will change. All right, so DSTV really get good revenues during the soccer season, but still, in that season, you'll find out that if you have Ghanaians that have to take children to school, that even have to buy a land, media will be secondary. So sometimes you have to understand the people and the kind of purchasing power there and put it in your business plan for your business to be successful. Okay.
Sophie Guignard, le monde a fait son extension africaine. Naturellement, on peut s'imaginer que vous voulez aller plus loin. Et je vois que, par exemple, le New York Times, il a une partie qu'il joint au monde de temps en temps. Vous avez aussi des collaborations avec Le Temps en Suisse. Est-ce que vous avez un journal en Afrique où vous avez une collaboration éditoriale, peut-être en vue d'une reprise, de rachat d'un journal ? Parce que les journaux se vendent, s'achètent.
Alors en print, on ne fait rien du tout en Afrique.
Rien du tout, ouais.
Non. Ça a été étudié, hein, le premier projet du Monde Afrique qui remonte à il y a 4 ans, avant même que j'arrive, c'était du papier. Mais on s'est quand même vite rendu compte que c'était quand même pas très novateur et que c'était pas très prometteur. Et les tirages du papier en Afrique étaient très bas. On regardait l'Observateur au Sénégal ou Fraternité Matin à Abidjan, qui sont en Côte d'Ivoire, qui sont les principaux médias. Papier, c'est des tout petits tirages, donc
c'était de combien à peu près ?
Alors il y a l'officiel et le réel. Après, bon, quand on parle avec les directeurs, on est sur du 8 000, 10 000 ou 15 000 peut-être pour Fraternité Matin. L'Observateur, je crois que c'est plutôt 30 ou 40, mais ça reste, c'est quand même pas énorme. Donc en plus, bon, c'est quand même pas le média du futur. Donc nous, on s'est dit qu'en étant online, on était peut-être plus dans l'air du temps, qu'on pourrait être plus innovant et plus panafricain, dans le sens où il n'y a pas de frontières. Et aussi parce qu'on a une forte audience en France et qu'on veut pas servir que le marché africain, mais notre audience francophone, intéressée par l'Afrique, sans faire de vraies distinction après sur leur localité. Mais alors sur les médias avec lesquels on travaille, alors c'est assez difficile parce que les médias africains sont souvent assez partisans, en tout cas ceux qu'on a identifiés, ils sont soit pro ou contre gouvernement, donc c'est assez difficile d'avoir... Donc on est plutôt avec des blogs, même si de temps en temps, là par exemple, la couverture des élections en Côte d'Ivoire, il y a un petit partenariat avec Fraternité Matin justement où il y a un photographe qui suit la campagne, qui prend des photos, etc., pour avoir un aspect très local, voilà, pour essayer de suivre sur le terrain et pas avec nos yeux de français, etc. Donc sur de l'occasionnel, on fait des partenariats avec les gros médias institutionnels, et après sur des contributions ou même via les collaborateurs, c'est souvent des gens qui contribuent aussi à des blogs locaux, je sais pas, El Watan au Maghreb, ou alors Cnéweb, Abidjan.net, etc. Donc on essaye de travailler plutôt avec voilà, des blogs qui nous paraissent plus dynamiques et un petit peu plus indépendants aussi à certains aspects. Après, est-ce qu'on a en vue d'en racheter ? J'aimerais bien, mais on n'a pas un budget énorme. Enfin, le budget, c'est à nous de le trouver systématiquement. Donc voilà. Et puis, c'est pas des médias non plus qui ont des business models. Donc ce serait intéressant s'ils en avaient un, s'ils avaient eux-mêmes trouvé une manière de générer des revenus de manière pérenne, et s'ils avaient, je sais pas, une régie ou un système d'abonnement qui fonctionnait. Et là, on aurait vraiment à apprendre et on aurait vraiment cette compétence à directement clé en main à récupérer. Mais là, de ce qu'on voit, et c'est ce que je demandais tout à l'heure à un de vos intervenants qui est du fond, s'il avait identifié en Afrique francophone des médias qui fonctionnent, qui sont indépendants financièrement, qui ont réussi à trouver un business model, et il n'en a pas trouvé. Donc, parce qu'on serait, oui, on pourrait potentiellement s'y intéresser pour être plus locaux, pour être plus africains, mais si vous en connaissez, faites-nous signe.
Justement, alors ça c'est la grande question qui est aussi mentionnée dans le programme. On ne parle pas que des stratégies d'investissement, mais aussi de l'indépendance de la presse. Alors, as you are a regulator in Ghana, you represent the authority regulating the media market, audiovisual market. Yes. In Ghana, can you tell us if there is a real independent press or media?
Yes, there is. Am I on? What? Yeah. There is.
No, it's not on.
It is.
Yes, try it.
Yes.
No.
Why doesn't it function? Did you press on? Well, ah bon. Aha, okay.
Yes, there is. I was actually coming to let you know there is, all right? Whether they want to sell it or they, that I don't know. But there is. Normally you have entities that you have, ministers have certain percentages in there. You have entities that the government himself have certain percentages in there. You have entities that they are totally independent and investors are in there. So one is Media 7 Consult is completely independent and they're doing very, very well. English speaking. You're looking for French? Okay. Well, that's Ghana.
That's Ghana.
That's Ghana. I don't know the French-speaking countries, right? You know, Ghana. But if they are in Ghana, there is. I'm sure those from Nigeria will be able to give you a list of them. And I'm sure somebody who speaks French also, yes, there is. You know, because we, their focus is not very dynamic like the media entities here. You know, and when they're doing well in a particular area, they emphasize on that area. And they do it for a very long time. So if you are not careful, you wouldn't know that they are there. In Ghana, you have the multi-TV. Now, the multi-TV, which is from the multi-group, have about 10 radio stations and have satellite TV. Now, they have their digital TV as well, all right? And the multiplex licenses, they gave it to three entities, and multi-TV is one of them. All right, and you needed to have a particular criteria before you get that nationwide license to deploy the digital terrestrial television. So multi-TV is there. There are other local ones that kind of partner with multi-TV. And so Gold TV is there, and they are also. But in terms of French, no, I won't be able to help you with French companies that...
But okay. I'm not saying that there are no independent medias in the Francophone like part of Africa. I'm just saying like it's really difficult to find an independent media and a sustainable like business model like of this independent media. So it's two very complicated things to join because usually either they have the money and they don't have the independence, or they have the independence but they don't have the money. And you know, independence is very expensive.
Right.
So this is really like something that we're seeing, and it's that's really complicated. So we, as so for the moment, because it's new for us, we prefer like to work with them, but we don't get like engaged like business wise. We don't. Yeah.
Well, SABC is it's South Africa government swing media entity, and they've just bought 5% in multi groups business. All right, and I'm sure that they wouldn't just come in and pay money. They'll look a business plan, they'll look at records and things like that. They wanted 10%, but they didn't give it to them. They gave them 5%. That tells you that there is somebody's doing well to stop such a big player and just give him 5%. When Richard Branson came to Ghana, he wanted to buy 25% of Media 7 Consult. They said, we're fine, we don't need it. You see what I mean? So so they are. But I can only help you with the English ones. In case of you want to find one, then I can give you a couple of them. But
but there is no legal frame for forbidding to take more than 20% of a company, like in France. In France, you can buy only 20% of a media company. That's
right.
A legal frame. And have you got a legal frame protecting domestic media companies?
Yes, definitely. You can have more than 25%.
You can.
You cannot.
You cannot. It's also in your law.
Yes. Well, if they're doing it everywhere, we have to do the same. Isn't that right? Good. So you can have more than 25%. So foreign investors, you can have 25%. But it depends on how you structure your business partnership.
Yeah.
You see, it depends on how you structure your business partnership, where you will be able to have more on the revenue side, but on equity side. Mm-hmm. All right, so the law is flexible like that. All right?
But so I can found a media business in Ghana all of my own.
You want? Can you find one?
I found. Create. I can create a media business in Ghana with my money, with my finance.
Being a foreign investor. With no local person, is that what you're saying?
No, just with local person.
Of course.
Yes.
You cannot just buy your own. You need a local.
I can be an entrepreneur.
Of course.
Independent entrepreneur with my... Yes, okay. Are there questions or statements in the... Yes, but first, Mr. Smith.
I get to you very quickly. Just a word of explanation. There are different traditions between Francophone and English-speaking countries. The English-speaking countries have an economy of scale that works differently. If you have 150 million people in Nigeria, or you in a country like Ghana, you can run a business. Second point is historically, France was the tutelary power throughout the Cold War, so you have the only combining Francophone media that exists is based in Paris, Jeune Afrique. You had a tradition of these neo-colonies having their local market. They were small markets, so there is not much to buy today. And you had the overriding media that were usually based in Paris. And so you have today is a very bad moment in Francophone Africa to set up a media business, especially in print, because there is no historical background for that. Mm. And you had that, tutelary presence that was there until the end of the Cold War, roughly.
And even Jeune Afrique is not really independent in terms of content.
I'm not going to make a statement on that, but you see, they have survived under very difficult circumstances, and I do agree that they probably would not be an ideal partner for Le Monde. At least they don't want to, and they also have a very dictatorial tradition. Yeah. So they had an autocrat running that. So they're very much like Africa prior to the 1990s, and they will have a war of succession between the sons. And I think they're more likely to be bought up. And you can take me up on that in 5 or 10 years. They're more likely to be bought up by Africans than the other way around.
Ah, okay. Please. Go on. It works.
Okay, my question is for Sophie. On your international decks, you have 4 reporters. Are they based in Paris or any of the African countries? On the international decks, you have 4 reporters there. Where are they based? Paris or Africa?
There are 2 in South Africa, and 1 is in Abidjan, and 1 is in Tunisia, I think.
Okay, now my next question. If this is no L'Amour Africa, how do you want to cover the continent when you look at the number of the French-speaking African country, and I only got 2 reporters?
No. These are the 4 permanent staff, okay, paid by Paris. They are on the payroll, and they are historical. Then we have a network that we are developing, a network of, for the moment it's 20, but it can be 25, 30, because they are collaborators. So basically they are freelancers based in 20 countries, and they contribute occasionally or regularly with their contributions. So this is the way we cover so far. Then we don't, as I said, we are trying to cover Africa as well as we can. We don't have an unlimited newsroom. We don't have unlimited budget. It's very costly to cover. Traveling within Africa is extremely expensive. Sometimes it's easier from Paris. So, we would like to be more present. I would love to answer and say we have 20 payroll staff based in Africa, and they're all Africans. But we're going step by step.
If I put it this way, then there is no point to call it L'Amour Africa, because, again, if you are looking at the question of labor, you only have 20 freelancers on the continent. Mm-hmm. So how do you negotiate the exploitation of the labor? Are you saying indirectly that Africans could only be consumer, but they cannot be the producer of the content? Because if this is branded on Africa, L'Amour Africa, then it should be the other way around, in which you have more paid staff on the continent that might be able to give you locally generated content, not second-hand.
Yeah, I agree. Content. I agree. I mean, that's totally fine, and I totally understand. And that's one of our objectives. Like, so far, it's easier now to do it like from Paris, because that's where we're based. That's where we have the infrastructure. That's where we have like the management, and that's where we have the journalists. But like in 2 years, 3 years' time, if we succeed, we want to have a newsroom in Africa, just as The Guardian has a newsroom in the US and in Australia, just as the Chinese have, like, you know, New York Times has a Chinese newsroom that's not working yet, but like they're expecting the country to open up and they want to be there ready for it. So, yeah, I wish we would be bolder and we would invest more like from our side, like, and maybe my boss would kill me if he heard that, but I mean, personally, and within the newsroom of Le Monde Afrique, we would love to be there. And, you know, all the journalists, they always tell me, like, when are we going to Abidjan? We want to set up, like, a newsroom, and we want to settle in Abidjan, not in Paris, you know? But we're getting there.
You need to lobby more with your bosses.
No, I need to find more money.
Well, exactly, that's how you lobby. They have some. But I understand they are still in the experiment phase, and it will take time, but I hope it will come.
Oui, merci. J'étais seulement là cet après-midi, donc je ne sais pas si ça a été discuté dans d'autres ateliers. Ma question rejoint l'interrogation et la remarque de monsieur. Moi, je me demande, les Africains, ils n'ont pas besoin de l'aide des Européens. Et je pense que si... Donc moi, je ne parle pas du tout en termes d'aide aussi dans le monde médiatique. Pourquoi on n'achète pas plus de contenu aux médias africains, aux journalistes africains? C'est un continent de millions de gens et on voit rarement des Africains. Dans nos télévisions publiques, notre service public, il y a une femme noire que je vois des fois qui est à la RSI, au Tessin, Suisse alémanique, je ne sais pas, la Suisse romande, il n'y a rien. Mais par rapport aux informations, au contenu, pourquoi les médias ici, bon, ben, monsieur Ringier, enfin, le groupe Ringier, ils ne sont pas là, mais pourquoi est-ce qu'ils n'importent pas le contenu de l'Afrique ici? Que ce soit les gens qui vendent leurs articles, que ce soit les médias. Moi, je ne crois pas du tout que nous, on a des médias qui sont plus indépendants qu'en Afrique. Enfin, je ne pense pas, du point de vue des affaires. Enfin, pourquoi est-ce qu'on ne voit pas les affaires dans l'autre sens? Ce n'est pas nous qui devons aller là, c'est eux qui doivent venir.
Qui veut répondre? Mais vous avez...
Juste très, très rapidement, et puis je laisse la parole à mes collègues. Bon, ça, pour le coup, c'est une question purement éditoriale, enfin, à mon sens, et ce n'était pas vraiment l'objet. Donc, je vais parler, pour Serge Michel, qui est l'éditeur. Nous, on achète des contenus à des Africains, puisque nos collaborateurs sont, en tout cas, dans les pays francophones, en majorité africains, et on a vocation à avoir plus d'Africains que de Français. Après, on commence, on débute, donc pour l'instant, on va sur un petit peu le terrain un petit peu plus connu, et voilà. Et après, sur l'anglophone, c'est plus facile d'avoir recours à des Français, parce qu'il n'y a pas beaucoup d'Africains francophones expatriés. Enfin, en tout cas, on ne les trouve pas. Et après, il y a une deuxième question qui a été assez largement abordée ce matin, qui est la question de la formation. Et il y a des compétences qui manquent, en tout cas, en journalisme web, en journalisme économique, en tout cas, que nous, on ressent. Alors après, c'est nos standards. On peut discuter là-dessus et dire que c'est subjectif, etc. Mais en tout cas, pour écrire pour Le Monde, en tout cas, je ne veux pas parler des autres médias, il y a un problème aujourd'hui de formation, et c'est quelque chose dans lequel nous on essaye aussi de s'impliquer. Il y avait Philippe Couve ce matin, cet après-midi, qui parlait des MOOC qui ont été réalisés avec la CFI et Code for Africa. L'idée, c'est ça, c'est de se dire, bon, bah, ils sont pas formés, ok, on va les former, on va les aider, et après on va les embaucher localement. Mais voilà, donc c'est un effort qu'il y a à faire. Là encore, je suis totalement d'accord, et c'est l'idée. Après, on ne peut pas s'empêcher d'être français dans notre façon d'approcher les choses.
Je voudrais juste dire que moi, je ne suis pas d'accord, parce que Sophie veut un contenu pour des Africains. C'est normal que des Africains le fassent, mais vous ne vous faites pas expliquer les États-Unis par les Américains non plus, et c'est peut-être tant mieux. L'idée que vous ayez en Suisse des correspondants suisses aux États-Unis est une idée totalement normale. Vous traduisez en livre aussi, quand vous faites une traduction d'un livre, le traducteur, sa langue maternelle, c'est la vôtre. C'est ça le principe. Et c'est un bon principe, puisque c'est un Suisse qui, avec des yeux suisses, va aller aux États-Unis. Je prends l'exemple américain pour qu'on n'ait pas l'impression qu'on traite l'Afrique autrement que le reste du monde. Mais ça va être votre correspondant qui vous raconte la réalité américaine avec les yeux de son public. Et c'est ça le sens. Si un Américain vous raconte l'Amérique, vous n'y comprendriez rien. et d'une certaine façon, lui-même ne comprend pas ce que vous voyez.
Le regard de l'Afrique, c'est le colonialisme et tout ça, c'est toujours le regard de l'homme blanc. On n'a jamais essayé d'expliquer l'histoire dans l'autre sens.
Expliquer à qui ?
À nous, Européens, à nous, Blancs.
Oui, mais je veux dire, si vous avez envie d'avoir des contenus africains, il y a des télévisions africaines, il y a des livres africains, donc ce n'est pas inaccessible. Mais je pense que, avec toute la retenue, je pense que c'est difficile de persuader la radio, la télévision suisse romande d'avoir des correspondants africains qui vous racontent l'Afrique, un Burundais qui vous raconte l'actualité burundaise. Je m'excuse, mais ça ne marchera pas plus que la traduction par un Italien, d'un livre italien en français, s'il ne parle pas français. Ça ne marchera pas, je suis désolé.
Ouais. Je voulais, est-ce que, oui, il y a là-bas, derrière, une question.
Je voulais intervenir.
Oui, je voulais, on oui, vous
pour,
entend.
Pour répondre en partie à madame, puisque je regarde les chiffres au jour le jour, et en fait, un des problèmes majeurs, effectivement, du contenu africain, c'est déjà qu'il était assez rare pendant de longues années et qu'il n'intéressait pas forcément une population globale. Ça pouvait intéresser des gens, mais c'était du contenu souvent assez local, par communauté, etc. Donc ce n'était pas forcément à l'attention d'un large public. Ça, c'était un premier problème. Après, il y a le souci des standards. Et effectivement, je reprends la réflexion de Sophie, il y avait cette idée de standard. Mais c'est en train de changer. Et ça, je le vois dans les chiffres tous les jours qui évoluent. Le contenu, la vente, le volume de contenu africain par an a explosé ces 5 dernières années. Il y a un marché annuel, juste pour les programmes de télé, je parle, un marché annuel qui s'appelle le Discope, qui se déroule en Afrique. On est passé de 300 000 dollars à peu près, quelques millions de dollars à aujourd'hui presque 1 milliard de dollars de transactions de programmes africains principalement. Le problème, c'est qu'on a très peu de studios en Afrique. Vous avez des studios en Afrique du Sud, vous aviez quelques studios en Afrique du Nord, Maroc, etc. Anciennement, il y a eu des studios en Égypte, mais c'est des contenus qui ne se vendent pas partout. Alors maintenant, par exemple, pour ce qui est du Nigeria, l'industrie Nollywood, ils ont effectivement 2 à 3 000 films par an, enfin ça dépend des années. Dans ce lot, il y a des films de très très bonne qualité qui se sont exportés à l'international. Et maintenant, juste pour donner quelques exemples pour illustrer, à Paris, nous avons un festival du film de Nollywood qui se passe au cinéma L'Odéon, c'est rue de Rennes, chaque année, avec les meilleurs de Nollywood. Les films de Nollywood, les meilleurs, sont traduits en français. Ils sont distribués. Il y avait aussi un gros problème de distribution du contenu africain. Ils sont distribués par la société Téma, qui les distribue. Alors, c'est évidemment en mode payant. Il y a deux options, c'est sûr. Donc, tous les bouquets payants en France, disponibles donc, sur SFR Numérica, Orange, etc. Ça s'appelle le bouquet africain. Donc, il y a deux options, c'est à 5 euros ou 10 euros par mois. On peut s'abonner, désabonner quand on veut. Il y a eu également énormément d'exports vers le Royaume-Uni, les États-Unis. Maintenant, les chaînes, les bouquets de chaînes payantes aux États-Unis, qui sont Dish Networks, et il y en a d'autres, diffusent des chaînes africaines. En Angleterre, également sur Sky, on peut avoir accès à des chaînes africaines. Donc, c'est en train de se faire, là. C'est en pleine explosion. Mais comme on disait avant, il y avait un besoin de création de contenu. Et maintenant, certains gouvernements ont pris conscience de ça, comme par exemple le gouvernement ivoirien. Et ils veulent investir, ils donnent de l'argent pour construire des studios, pour aider les producteurs à se mettre en place. C'est-à-dire que les chaînes avant n'achetaient pratiquement pas le contenu. Ils disaient, nous on est un tuyau, comme les opérateurs télécoms, donnez-nous votre film, on le diffuse gratuitement. Et vous pouvez faire un peu de pub, etc. pour générer de l'argent, mais nous on ne paye pas votre film. C'était ça anciennement, la télé de Monsieur le Président africain dans chaque pays. C'est-à-dire les chaînes ne payaient pas pour les programmes. Et c'était à peu près, et pour le contenu, pour les articles de presse, il faut voir les réalités, et c'est encore le cas maintenant, souvent les journalistes étaient payés en retard. S'ils s'attaquaient un petit peu au gouvernement, ils étaient attrapés, ou alors ils fuyaient à l'étranger. Et d'ailleurs, il y a énormément d'Africains de la diaspora qui ont monté des médias focaliser sur un pays, mais ils le font de Londres, de Paris, etc. Parce que le président les attend. Ils sont bienvenus au pays, il les attend. Enfin voilà, il y a aussi ce problème de, voilà, de liberté de la presse. Et je vous rejoins tout à fait sur la censure, l'autocensure, etc. Bon, c'est la même chose chez nous. Mais voilà, il y a eu tout ce problème de création de contenu, trouver les business models, etc.
Voilà. Merci. Alors, on arrive vers la fin. Est-ce que vous voulez avoir un dernier mot ? Pas trop long.
Non, pas la français. let me chip in something. You see, broadcast is casted broad. And I always tell people. I kind of side with her a bit because we're dealing with content. Now, if we agree to produce a content, then you have come in on the table that let's make a content. Now, when you come on the table, let's produce a content, obviously we will deal with the quality of the content, the format of the content, where the final destination of the content is going, is paramount. All right, so I don't agree that you'll say, oh, the content, the quality is not good. No, that you did not do your due diligence for us to produce a content. Now, there is a place in Ghana called Inzulezu where they live on water. And they do everything on water. They cook on water. They do everything on water. Somebody in Switzerland would like to see that content. All right, so it's not about, I think content, it's, content is content, where if it is interesting, people watch, we watch geographical content from a different country. We look at documentaries from a different country. If you see Obama having a discussion with Mugabe, you will watch it. You understand? So producing the content, it's a different thing. And I think that if we really want to produce content, then we'll come on the table to do the content right. She started by saying, you want to help. That's where she started by coming from. So if you really want to help, then you've embarked on, you have to go through certain sacrifices or you don't. All right? So whilst you know your market terrain and say, right, will this content really fetch it? There are a lot of things in Africa, a lot of landscape, a lot of things in Africa that people here will want to watch, that people will learn from, and vice versa. And I think that in terms of production, we can come to a good quality agreement and produce it, and it will be a good quality content to broadcast it globally.
Oui, oui.
Je voulais juste rebondir sur ce qui vient d'être dit et sur la question. Nous, on n'est pas là pour, en tout cas le monde, Afrique, on n'est pas là pour aider, on est là pour faire. Ce n'est pas du tout notre ambition d'aider, on n'est pas le bras armé de l'AFD ou une non-profit, on est là pour faire. On veut développer des choses. Voilà. Donc ce n'est pas, voilà. C'est pas notre mandat, ce n'est pas notre ambition. Notre ambition, c'est de faire des choses. Et il y en a qui ça plaira, d'autres pas. On ne l'impose à personne, mais on pense qu'on a une carte à jouer, on pense qu'on a une place à prendre, on pense qu'il y a une demande. Et qu'on n'est pas si peu légitime, entre guillemets. Donc voilà, c'est tout. Merci.
Uniquement, pas un mot de conclusion, mais une note de bas de page. Il y a peut-être un malentendu. Les contenus africains sont évidemment aussi légitimes, intéressants, et probablement pour moi plus intéressants qu'une série américaine. Donc ça, c'est une chose. Moi, j'ai répondu à votre question, mais j'ai peut-être mal répondu, en pensant à l'actualité, la couverture d'actualité, le news. Est-ce qu'un correspondant est quelque part et m'explique quelque chose ? Les contenus, je pense que ce qui a été dit sur... des contenus de plus en plus disponibles et qui circulent dans le monde entier. Moi, je suis en Caroline du Nord, je peux avoir des Nollywood productions dans mon supermarché parce qu'il y a suffisamment d'Africains. Et donc, je peux acheter une comédie et si ça m'amuse, je passe mon samedi soir plutôt ça qu'une série américaine. Et ça, c'est certainement un progrès. Merci.
Oui, OK. Alors, s'il n'y a plus d'intervention... je me permets de terminer ici le débat et je donne le dernier mot des derniers mots à Cinzia Dal Sotto.
Je vais faire vite.